Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka, Spicata, Jag, like Michael Walker, Polanco, and Franco. Where'd you go to Mexico?
Get into first place. Check Batty Valdeta and swing it strike grapes. Raisins out of shriveled grapes. Here's Adam's happy place.
Welcome, everybody. What's going on? It's your hot stove edition. Consider this the winter meeting of me, Chris, and Scott. Guys, where are the winter meetings right now?
Yeah.
Cool.
Is it technically winter?
No.
You are asking. I've never experienced a winter, Adam, so I have no idea.
It's like a week before winter. Most of December is fall. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Most of September is summer. Most of March is winter.
Yeah. It's weird.
Most of June is spring.
And I'll tell you what, the baseball stove is a lot hotter than the weather right now.
Oh!
I don't know who did that. I think it was Chris, right?
That was me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Chris. All right, let's get into it. And then we're going to take a look at Scott's shortstop rankings. We'll talk about Trey Turner, Trevor Story. See if Scott can get Chris to like Corey Seager and Adalberto Mondesi. Has not been easy. But Paul Goldschmidt got traded shortly after our last podcast to the Cardinals, for Luke Weaver. Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, and forever Andy Young. Forever Andy Young. And a draft pick. Value up, down are the same for Paul Goldschmidt, Scott White.
I think it's basically the same. He had a history, obviously, Arizona being historically a great place to hit. He had a history of doing better there than on the road. But obviously things changed in Arizona last year with the humidor, and his numbers were actually much, much better on the road, like even more extreme than they had ever been the other way before then. So I feel like star caliber players, they have, they kind of take the path of least resistance to their best to their usual numbers more often than not. So I think he's going to be fine in St. Louis. I think he showed over the final 4 months of last year that he's as good as ever, and should still be a first round pick, or at least a second round pick.
Yeah. Goldschmidt had an OPS over 1,000 in his last 110 games after a 675 OPS in his first 48 games. He is 31 years old and only 7 steals last year. So he's, you know, probably almost certainly not going to be a first round pick, but I'm sure we all would love to have Goldschmidt in the second round. And we've talked a lot about him in the offseason. But what about Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, and Andy Young and a draft pick, Chris? What do you think about this return for the Diamondbacks?
It's a light return. From a baseball perspective, but it's interesting for fantasy. Carson Kelly finally gets an opportunity to play every day. He is still only 24 years old. You know, his prospect status has taken a bit of a hit as he's languished at AAA. He's been there for now 3 seasons, but you know, he's a catcher with a pulse and, you know, presumably 110 starts next season. So, you know, if he gets 110 starts, he could hit 15 homers and, you know, 275, and that might be enough to make him a top 12 catcher.
What happened to Luke Weaver last year? Luke Weaver went from a guy who, in his rookie year in 2017, had a 2.05 ERA in his first 11 appearances, then he absolutely bombed in his last 2 starts, 14 earned runs and 7 2/3. But he looked like completely legit, 65 strikeouts and 52 2/3 in those first 11 starts. And then he comes out last year, 4.95 ERA, better as a starter, 4.66 ERA, down to 116 strikeouts and 129 and a third. Scott, is Luke Weaver salvageable?
Well, I think that's really what this deal hinges on. The Cardinals obviously didn't believe he could get them through the ninth after all that. So the Diamondbacks are taking a chance on it. And as best I can tell from the data, he didn't do as good a job getting ahead in the count last year. Like, he still threw strikes at a pretty typical rate, but he seems like it doesn't seem like he has a varied enough arsenal to get away with pitching behind in the count. And I mean, most pitchers can't really pitch like that anyway. That's my theory right now anyway. it wasn't just a small sample in 2017 that got us excited about him. You look at his minor league track record. For his minor league career, the ERA is barely over 2. So
he didn't have the strikeout rate.
He had a strikeout per inning.
But not what he did in 2017.
Right. Right. I don't know that he's going to be like, I don't think he has ace potential.
Do you draft him? Do you guys draft Luke Weaver? Let's say you're doing a 20-ish round draft.
Yes.
20 rounds? I don't know that I do.
I think you're looking for upside in the late rounds, and I think he has some. I'm not super enthused about Luke Weaver, but we saw enough from him that, yeah, I'll take a flyer.
I just think there's so many pitchers who you could say, oh, this guy has upside, he's worth a flyer. Carlos Rodon, Reynaldo Lopez. I think I'd look to those types before I look to Weaver, but I do think there's still potential there. I'm glad he's going to get a chance now. This trade assures him that. It didn't look like he was going to get that chance in St. Louis, so I would rather him be pitching for someone, and we'll see what it leads to.
All right. Would you guys rather have Luke Weaver or Nate Eovaldi? Or Nate? I should really call him Nathan Eovaldi. It appears
definitely Eovaldi. I'm kind of bullish on Eovaldi next year.
Hey, let me just jump in. Just want everybody to know we have a sound in the background. In case you're hearing it, everything's fine.
That's me crying.
Yeah, that's Chris crying about the new Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which he thinks just looks really weird. Or it's me crying because I don't think that there's a movie that looks worse than Aquaman. Like Aquaman just looks awful. I'm not gonna see it. But yeah, there's a high-pitched sound that you might hear in the background. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. We've got it under control. Scott, you're bullish on Nate Eovaldi, who signed a 4-year deal for $68 million. But dude, where's my strikeouts?
Well, I'm not that bullish. I'm not as bullish as the Red Sox are on him, but it depends what the perception ends up being. I mean, he did have a big postseason showing, so maybe there's some potential for him to be overvalued on draft day. But if he's going right around 50th at starting pitchers, I would be glad to take him, because the way he changed his arsenal what have we always said about Nathan Eovaldi? Oh, he throws hard, but it's not a particularly effective fastball. He doesn't miss bats with it.
Right.
He changed his primary secondary pitch, if that makes sense, to a cutter, which is closer both in shape and velocity to his fastball. And what happened with that change is his swinging strike rate on the fastball itself went way up. So he learned a way to maximize his full arsenal, and I think that's what we saw coming to fruition in the postseason. I think you could classify him as a breakout candidate.
Chris, what do you think of Eovaldi, breakout candidate?
Sure. In the same way that any pitcher can be a breakout candidate, I suppose. I'm not super enthused by Nathan Eovaldi. It's a super limited track record of him being a useful fantasy option, really. Like, even when he was in Miami and he had, like, I think he had one season with, like, a mid to high 3 ERA, he wasn't that good for fantasy. Last year, it was 45 innings or so with the Red Sox.
54.
What?
54 innings, 3.33 ERA, 12 walks, 48 strikeouts, only 3 home runs allowed. You know he gets a lot of ground balls, and he's probably not going to be a very good whip guy.
And we should keep in mind this great story. Incredible what he did for the Red Sox. What in the ALCS when he came in on no days rest? He came in on like no days rest at one point, right?
Well, I'm not sure. But here's what happened. He had a start against the Yankees in the DS. 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 run. He had a start at the Astros, 6 innings, 2 runs, on 6 hits. And then he made 4 relief appearances in the World Series. In the first 3, they were pretty conventional. 3 1/3 innings, 1 hit, no runs. Then he threw 6 innings in an extra innings game.
Yeah.
I think he took the loss, actually, but he gave up 2 runs in 6 innings, pitched very well.
Yeah, he threw 6 innings after throwing 2 innings. And this is a guy who's had 2 Tommy John surgeries. Had elbow surgery, I think. He had elbow surgery at the start of last season, right, to remove some loose bodies.
I don't remember that, but you're always right about that stuff.
I just, there's a lot of risk beyond just the fact that he just might not be that good. Like, if he goes like 200th overall, I'm fine taking him there, because there's no risk. But if he starts to creep up, or if there's someone in your league who likes him a lot and wants to take him in like the 13th or 14th round, I'm fine passing too.
Okay, it's Nate Eovaldi. So, what else has happened? I don't want to just go news item by news item, but what else has happened that you think has a big fantasy impact? We got McCutcheon, 3 years, $50 million to the Phillies. Brandon Morrow could miss the start of the season. He was excellent last year. I think he had 24 saves and 26 chances before going on the DL. Could miss the start of the season due to elbow surgery. Buster Posey might not be full go at the start of the season. He had off-season hip surgery. Kenley Jansen expected to be 100% for spring training. I think the most important thing is that Adam Ottavino thinks he'd strike out Babe Ruth every time.
And he's 100% correct.
You know, I thought. That's what I thought, too.
In a time machine situation. But if we're doing like a, if we're like stealing Babe Ruth from the orphanage when he's 2 years old and moving him into, you know, 1992 and bringing him up with my, okay, then Babe Ruth would be very good. But in a strictly time, like if Babe Ruth just gets dropped into the middle of, I don't know, Coors Field next year and he's facing Adam Ottavino, first of all, imagine how terrified he is by like the scoreboards and all the like planes and everything.
Right.
Like,
you're introducing like, some just, variables
he's
here.
He's just so thrown off. An iPhone would absolutely terrify Babe Ruth.
An iPhone? Yeah, probably.
All right, but what if you dropped Adam Ottavino into 1911?
He'd be the greatest pitcher in the history of the world.
Yeah,
he would strike out every single player.
That's kind of what I thought. But
from baseball.
But I don't want to argue with Tim Kirkchin. Tim Kirkchin was like, this is ridiculous. Babe Ruth would be amazing no matter what.
He's wrong. Of course. Of course. It's ridiculous.
Scott, what do you think? How many? What would if he gave Babe Ruth 50 at-bats against Adam Ottavino, what would his batting average be?
Well, I don't think Adam Ottavino would literally strike him out every time. But the broader point that Ottavino and Chris are trying to make, I think is true. Like, just the way pitching has evolved over 100 years is, it would blow Babe Ruth's mind. Now, I think Babe Ruth would be like Tim Tebow. I think that's what he'd be.
I think he'd be a poor man's Madison Bumgarner.
I think he'd hit 250.
No way. Not a chance.
With all the shifts,
he would strike out more than 75% of the
time. Can we look up like what he did against like Christy Mathewson? Is there any
it
way
doesn't to matter. This is the thing, is that those dudes were throwing like 89 mile an hour fastballs.
Are they?
No,
I thought they were throwing pretty hard.
Does baseball have
a velocity reading on Christy Mathewson?
Here's my thing on this general topic. You look at like the world record for like the 100-meter dash in 1911, it was probably like a second and a half slower than it currently is. Any time that we can measure things like that, the amount of progress that has been made constantly improves.
Of course.
And in sports, for some reason, people believe that like 210-pound Kevin McHale would be able to dominate the NBA in 2018. Like, it just... progress moves forward.
But Babe Ruth was really big. Like, Babe Ruth's even a good size for today's game.
I think Babe Ruth was like...
he was like 6'2", 2-something. 2,000 pounds.
Babe Ruth was 6'2", 215 pounds. He was like Paul Goldschmidt size.
Yeah, he's a big dude. You know, he's
well,
not
Well,
like
I mean,
huge.
we're sticking with the time machine scenario, right? Like, if Babe Ruth had a year to face Adam Ottavino, to like practice against him,
I think he could.
Then
be
maybe he'd be fine.
Instance,
he'd hit 250. All right. So, what other fantasy stuff, Scott? What's got your rankings in an upheaval?
I don't know that anything has them in an upheaval. Their closer talk is always going to create the most movement, and there was a report just in the last couple days that the Diamondbacks are leaning toward using Archie Bradley as their closer, which is the first time I think I've actually heard that come out of management's mouth there. Now, it wasn't that great last year, but we know how good he can be. And, you know, if I would prefer clarity in that situation, because prior to that, there was none. Boxberger kind of imploded and nobody else really stepped up before the season's end. So that's one thing. Andrew McCutchen, I'm surprised he got the deal he got with the Phillies. I didn't think he'd get a 3-year deal anywhere.
Yes.
But I do. I'm still intrigued by the idea of him playing in a hitter's park for an extended period. I know it didn't lead to much with the Yankees, but obviously it was a much smaller sample. He's going to get a full season to show what he can do there. I mean, yeah. Pittsburgh's and San Francisco, certainly tough place to hit.
Sure. I'm sorry. Let me just give the numbers on McCutchen. He batted only .225 at Yankee Stadium, but he slugged .450. This is 11 games, so you don't want to make too much of it. But
I mean, 5 homers and 87 at bats. That's
5 homers? I had 2 homers.
Overall with the Yankees.
Oh, yeah. No, at Yankee Stadium, he had 2 homers in 11 games. So he had last 2 years, his OPS at home and on the road was nearly identical, but his power was much better on the road, where like his OBP would be better at home. That was the weird thing. So McCutchen, just look, everybody knows if you listen to this podcast, you know, I'm not a McCutchen guy, but just the raw numbers. Keep in mind, he plays a lot of games. He plays like 155 games every year. The last 3 years haven't been great years for him. And he's been number 19, number 10, and number 20. Well, I'll go in chronological order. Number 24, number 10, and number 19. 2016, 17, and 18 in points leagues. Number 26, number 17, and number 33 outfielder in categories / rotisserie leagues.
He's probably going to go underdrafted next year because we're going to get excited about other guys and kind of pass on him. But he hit 20 homers and stole 14 bases. And there aren't a ton of guys who do that. Even, you know, hopefully he won't hit .255 again. But yeah. I still think he's a useful fantasy option, especially in both formats.
Well, in OBP leagues, he's much better.
This is a really good scenario for him because he's 32 years old and the numbers have obviously declined in recent years, but the batted ball profile has remained virtually the same. Going to a small park could be what wrings that last bit of juice out of him.
And just for context, in those early mock drafts that I've mentioned in previous podcasts, his ADP was 153. I love him at that value.
Yeah, even I like Andrew McCutchen at that value.
Can I mention a move that hasn't been made yet, but hopefully will be made that could have a huge impact on rankings?
No.
Can we get Jose Martinez somewhere?
Where, who?
Jose Martinez, can we just get him somewhere?
Well, it's the Dodgers are the latest team that's interested in him, which is not where I would like to see him go.
That makes perfect sense.
Does it?
From the standpoint of what kind of team they are and how they view players. But I would hate it.
Yeah, right. Because
he's a DH, and he just needs to be a DH. And can we get him to, like, the Rays?
Yes.
Or something?
That would be great.
Or the White Sox?
Well, sure. Let me tell you the rumor that I think would have the biggest fantasy impact. Jim Bowden saying that the Rockies are interested in trading for a first baseman. And the ones that he said could possibly be on the list would be Carlos Santana, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Abreu, and Will Myers. So it looks like
Jose Abreu would be amazing in Coors Field. That would be so much fun. He could legitimately put up Nolan Arenado numbers in Coors Field, I think.
Okay.
Given the fact that he hits .290 already.
Yeah.
Every year. Like, he could hit .310 with 37, 38 homers every year with her.
It would be fun. So we'll, hopefully that'll happen. I'm going to just say some other headlines, and you tell me if there's any fantasy impact, if you care at all. Well, Brandon Morrow might miss the start of the season due to elbow surgery. So that's important, right?
Sure. Could be.
I expected him to be the Cubs closer, so yeah.
Is there another name that comes to mind?
Well, Pedro Strop's a free agent, and he was the one who filled in for Morrow down the stretch last season. I imagine the Cubs opening day closer isn't on their roster right now.
Okay. More news. Buster Posey might not be full go at the start of the season. I wonder where he's going, Buster Posey.
176th in those drafts, and there were some where he was after 200.
Yeah,
McCutcheon
like
or Posey?
Posey.
Posey.
Oh, okay.
Kenley Jansen expect to be 100% for spring training. I already said that one. All right, other stuff. Billy Hamilton, 1 year, $5.25 million to the Royals.
Love it.
Yeah, it's good news. It's good news. Team that actually wants to play him because for some reason they think it's 1984. I mean, they might have the league's top three base dealers in their lineup between him, Mondesi, and Whit Merrifield. So that's interesting. And I think Hamilton was such a disappointment last year. I mean, he didn't do the one thing you draft him to do, really. He had less than 30 stolen bases, and obviously he hit poorly like he always does. But I see no reason to think he can't get back to being a 40-50 steal guy, and now you probably don't have to pay a fourth, fifth, sixth round pick for him.
Yeah, dude, if Billy Hamilton can just hit 250, let me tell you what he's done as a 250 hitter with more than 600 plate appearances in 2014 and 2017. I mean, it's not like going to completely blow you away, but he was a top 20 outfielder, I think, both times in Roto. You know, in points leagues, you can leave him, but just hit 250. He hit 234, I think, last year, 236. Just hit 250, Billy Hamilton. That's
all it is. It's a good fit for his skill set in that park, too, because he's a great defender. They have a big outfield. So, you know, you would guess he probably hits ninth in that lineup. They might have a 280 team on base percentage, but just let him run. The way they let Whit Merrifield and Adalberto Mondesi run last year and the fact that they signed this guy, that actually, it kind of makes me like Merrifield and Mondesi a little more, too, because this is clearly... It seems to be an organizational philosophy that they
half
want.
Half the league's stolen bases are going to come from Kansas City.
That's awesome. other stuff. Carlos Carrasco signed a 3-year contract extension. Only $37.25 million.
He needs a new agent.
What, right? What was that all about?
It guaranteed an option year that the team had for 2021, I believe, and then added, 2 years on after that. But like the most he's going to make at any point is like $14 million per year. It's wild.
Yeah, that's quite a deal for the Indians. Detroit signed Tyson Ross to a 1-year deal, $5.75 million. Tyson Ross.
Cool.
Yeah, no thanks. Oh, this is going to end up well. Philly manager Gabe Kapler says he's going to hold his players publicly accountable more often. Players love that.
Sure. Whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Tampa Bay is going to continue to use an opener. Dave Roberts and Clayton Kershaw are both hopeful that Clayton Kershaw can regain some velocity this year.
Pittsburgh's going to use an opener, or they're going to experiment with an opener. They mentioned that in recent days.
Yeah, so that leads us to an email that we can read now from Jesse. Jesse says, I guess, Chris, what did you say about openers a few...
That I don't think it really matters all that much, and that Tampa Bay was really the only team that did it all that often.
Jesse says, I claim poppycock and shenanigans on two things Chris said. First, multiple teams experimented last year with the opener concept to finish the season, with the A's even starting Liam Hendricks in the wild card game. No way the Rangers won't at least think about it with who they have. Chavez might end up with 15 wins, bold prediction. Secondly, positional eligibility doesn't matter. I keep pace in my daily leagues because I can switch my players according to their pitching matchup with necessities. Which necessitates? What'd you say?
That's a mischaracterization of my argument.
I agree, Jesse.
Position eligibility does matter. It doesn't give you like it doesn't. It's not like because I think the question was Jose Ramirez, and if he was second base eligible and third base eligible, would he be better than Mookie Betts and Mike Trout? It's valuable. It matters. It doesn't fundamentally change how you value a player.
And I don't think it matters as much as it did 5 years ago.
And there's not as much a difference between shortstop and first base and outfield anymore.
Yeah, no, but
there's one position where value really changes.
Yeah, but players with multi-position eligibility can
especially
really help. They can help you for sure. That's important. But yeah, it's like position scarcity is what Chris was talking about, right?
Yeah, a little bit of both.
Right, okay. What else we got here? Mickey Callaway said that Peter O'Brien has a chance to make the opening day roster.
as
who?
What? As the the stand-in until they're ready to call up.
I'm legitimately confused right now. You mean Peter Alonso?
Yeah, Peter Alonso. Peter Alonso. Sorry.
Peter O'Brien is on the Marlins.
Peter Alonso might be as their first baseman.
Okay, that's who I was referring. Okay, awesome. So that makes more sense. I just assumed the Mets had picked up O'Brien on a minor league deal or whatever. But
I think Peter Alonso could be Rhys Hoskins. I think it's a similar skill set for me.
Toronto released Troy Tulowitzki. The White Sox acquired Ivan Nova. Andrew Benintendi is going to lead off, and Mookie Betts is going to bat second.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Mickey Callaway said Edwin Diaz is the closer, and it makes sense to keep him in that role. So that's good.
Yeah.
Baltimore is going to hire Cubs bench coach Brandon Hyde to be their manager. I think they
everybody
hired.
Hyde.
Yep. And Brian Cashman says Gary Sanchez is the Yankees catcher
until they trade him. Then he's not.
There's been some rumors of the Yankees being involved with JT Realmuto, but there's also rumors that it could be a three-way that they're involved with. So Gary Sanchez is good. Just let him play.
Oh, I would love to see Noah Syndergaard go to the Yankees. How fun would that be?
I'm grateful for any new pitcher for Yankees fans to turn on inevitably.
Yeah, we'll hate Paxton soon. All right, Scott's shortstop rankings. Let's get into him in just a bit. But I'm excited about today's sponsor because I was looking at some pictures today. Because Facebook did a thing that made me very emotional. It put together a photo album of my 2018. And I'm just getting older. I am getting older. Have you ever looked at a photo of yourself from 5 years ago? This was less than 1 year ago. But from 5 years ago and thought, damn, I looked young. What happened to that guy? Where did all these wrinkles come from? When did I start looking like my dad? Well, if you're worried about aging, we've got 4hims.com for you. 4hims.com/FBTSkin. FORHIMS. 4hims.com/FBTSkin. It's your skin. So get the anti-aging kit from 4hims.com/FBTSkin and save $20 off your first month. Hims has an anti-aging kit. It's a custom prescription cream tailored to your skin that can keep your skin looking youthfully smooth by reducing the appearance of wrinkles and fine lines. And there's no secret here. It's tretinoin. Its results are backed by science. You can renew and restore your skin by increasing collagen, and that's the protein that keeps your skin firm. So this is really easy to use. It takes just seconds to apply. It's the same treatment that celebrities use to keep their faces looking young. And, you know, we're celebrities in our own right. So we should be using the 4hims.com/FBTSkin anti-aging kit. Again, $20 off your first month. 4hims.com/FBTSkin. All right, Scott, just a few shortstop questions for you. I don't want to get too deep into these position rankings because it's almost January. We're going to be doing these for real pretty soon. But
this is a warm-up.
Yeah, this is a little warm-up, just a little peek.
Yeah, crack your knuckles.
What do you think about Trey Turner? What kind of a hitter is Trey Turner?
I think Trey Turner is he's a low line drive hitter, so he's always going to be, unless that changes, he's going to hit for lower average than we want him to. I think that should just be baked into the assessment of him now, instead of just assuming year after year it's a fluke. He's going to have a huge breakthrough this year. So I think that means he probably doesn't need to be drafted in the first round in a points league. Now, in a roto league, obviously, he's one of the elite base dealers and needs to be drafted in the first round of that format. But I'm not counting on more than a 275, 280 batting average, more than 15 homers. And mostly the steals are going to be what carries him.
Yeah, and the steals were down last year. What's your question, Chris?
So last year he batted second 78 times. So he was hitting in front of Bryce Harper for most of those games. Presumably Bryce Harper didn't miss much time last year. He only stole 17 bases in those games. In 63 games batting first, he stole 22 bases. Now, he attempted 23 in both sample sizes, but still 23 bases in 63 games versus 23 steals or 23 steal attempts in 78 games. That's not nothing. You know, if he's batting leadoff, or if they're more willing to let him run when they don't have a big bat like Bryce Harper behind him, that could make a difference. And then, you know, he batted 5th, 6th, and 7th in 17 games and only attempted, he attempted 5 steals in those games. So if he's batting first and he's not in front of Bryce Harper, maybe he gets more opportunities to run.
Well, what's the difference in your rankings with him, Scott, points versus Roto, returner?
In terms of where he actually slots at the position?
Uh-huh. Because you have him 4th in points.
Okay.
Behind Lindor, Bregman, Machado, Turner. Would you move Turner ahead of any of those three, Lindor, Bregman, or Machado?
No. I think he's probably 4th in both, but it's a difference of where he... overall. How early he goes... Yeah. Among the players overall. Like, right. He's a first rounder in head to in Roto. He's a second rounder in head to head. I mean, he's a stud in both, but I'm no longer assuming he's going to transform into a better hitter than the one we've already seen.
Okay.
So as long as he keeps running a lot, and there's no reason to think that's going to change anytime in the near future, may actually go up, like Chris was saying. He's going to be a stud.
All right, last thing on Trey Turner, his 162 game steals pace in 3 seasons, because we haven't seen him play a full. Oh, we did last year, but the first two were shortened seasons. 96 games, 66. No, sorry. How many games did he play?
398.
Thank you. 73 steals, 76 steals, 43 steals. That was his 162 game pace for those 3 years. And last year he played exactly 162 games, so it was pretty easy to calculate that. Next question. Do you believe in Trevor Story? What are you singing over there?
In Life After Love.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with Do You Believe in Magic, but instead you went with Cher.
I went with the better song.
Chris, do you believe in Trevor Story? Oh. That wasn't bad, was it?
That was pretty good.
It was too good.
I do not believe in what Trevor Story did last year. And I didn't believe in what Trevor Story was doing all season. And I looked like a big old dummy doing that.
You still do.
So, yeah.
Look, if the strikeout gains hold, and if he continues to run, those were the biggest changes last year, and it made him a stud. So if that happens, then I see no reason to think the other numbers won't follow suit. But it's a big if. I mean, a year ago at this time, we were saying if the strikeout gains hold for Giancarlo Stanton, he's going to be an MVP caliber player again. And they didn't, and he wasn't.
Right. So that's what you sort of attribute 2017 to. Like, why was 2017 so bad for Trevor Story?
The strikeout rate was horrible.
Right. But it was pretty bad. It was bad in 2016, and he was amazing.
Yeah, that was the bigger fluke, I think.
Okay, understood. And how many steals would you project for Trevor Story? He had, what did he have last year?
That's the impossible thing to say.
He had 27.
27, he attempted 33 steals in 157 games. Now, part of that was he was on base more, but not that much more, because he only attempted 9 steals in 145 games in 2017. I don't know how you answer that question. Like, that's a huge question for him, because, you know, if he can sustain those strikeout gains, then it's not going to matter. He's going to be very good no matter what, because of the power and the park that he plays in. But if he slips back to 30% strikeouts, and all of a sudden maybe he's more of like a 265 hitter, then the stolen bases could be really key.
It's a lot of ifs. I mean, I think the upside is legit. One way I could sum it up is I'm putting together my top 100 dynasty rankings right now. And part of that process is I assign every player a score, a 1 to 5 score, 5 being the best, for present value, future value, and confidence, how confident I am in them reaching their present and future value. Trevor Story is a 5.52, meaning my confidence level is only a 2 on that 1-5 scale. He's going to be the highest ranked player who's only a 2 in terms of my confidence level. But that, I mean, it's a risk. It's a risk, but that's probably why you're going to get him in the second or third round instead of the first round.
Chris, you got any ADP?
Yes. I have 2 different sources in front of me. Which one would you prefer? They both mostly agree.
Source one.
In those 9, the 2 sources are those 9 early mock drafts that are on FanGraphs. And the other one is the National Fantasy Baseball Championship ADP, which is picking from only 15 leagues. So it's neither is more robust than the other. But he's in the 20 range in both. He's 22.8 in those 9 early mock drafts.
Man, yeah, that is a risk. That is a risk for a second round pick for sure. Scott, you think you can convince? Actually, I don't know where Chris is on this. Corey Seager, you have 9th. Adalberto Mondesi, you have 12th. Can you convince Chris to like them?
I think Chris is going to like Corey Seager this year. I don't think Chris liked Corey Seager as a second or third round pick, but as a 6th or 7th round pick, I think he's fully on board. And I think the track record of position players coming back from Tommy John surgery is favorable enough that I think everybody should steer into that. Part of the reason he's able to slide that far is because the position's improved as a whole so much. Trevor Story's become this stud level player. Xander Bogaerts has started to live up to the potential more. I think there's a couple names I'm forgetting too. Bregman, Manny Machado, they're both eligible there. It's kind of just the guy coming back from Tommy John surgery has to go behind all these guys because he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. So he ends up being a great value.
Azer, do you have his points league ranks for the last couple of years?
No, I don't. Corey Seager, but I can get it for you.
Yeah, because my thing with him is I think he's a lot better in head-to-head than points, or the head-to-head than Roto, excuse me. In 2017, he had a good year. He hit .295 with 22 homers, 85 runs, 77 RBI. He was the number 77 overall player in Roto and number 10 at shortstop. I think he can be better than he was in 2017, but he's still, there's a limit on how good he can be in Roto for a couple of reasons. One, never going to be a big home run guy unless he changes his swing because he just doesn't hit the ball in the air very much. And two, he just doesn't steal bases. He's a little bit like the pre-big breakout Freddie Freeman.
This is Corey Seager we are talking about, and he was number 10 in Roto in 2017. He was number 6 in points. And yeah, like Chris said, he had .295, 22 home runs, 4 steals, and about 1 walk for every 2 strikeouts. Only drove in 77 runs.
Incredible plate discipline. He's going to hit for a high average, but
yeah, very safe batting average source.
Yeah, but that's
one of the best line drive hitters in the game.
That's kind of the only place that he's really stood out so far in his career.
Okay, guys, how about Adalberto Mondesi? So, Chris, is that you think he's going too early, or you just don't have much interest at all in Mondesi?
So it's tough. I think I was talking to Scott about this in the office the other day, where I was going through my Roto evaluation and looking at projections. And I kept trying to tinker with Adalberto Mondesi's projections to get him out of like the top 30 range. It's hard. If he's going to steal a lot of bases, this is the thing with Roto. If you're going to steal 40 bases, kind of doesn't matter what else you do, you're gonna be a top 30 hitter. It's really hard not to be, and that's because they're so scarce. And if he steals 55 bases next year, he might be a second round type of player.
And there's
a ton of risk in his profile.
Yes, there is. I mean, he only became a hitter last year at AAA. That was the first sign that he could hit some. And horrible in terms of plate discipline. But Mondesi made the kind of contact last year that it seems like it would sustain, like it could sustain a high BABIP. And the strikeout rate really wasn't as bad as I think the general assumption would be. Plus, he has power. So I feel like this is Billy Hamilton who hits home runs. And
he strikes out.
I mean, Billy Hamilton used to go in round four himself.
Yeah.
So
who have him 12th, Mondesi. Who did you put him ahead of? Like, who just missed the cut in your top 12?
Well, I have him 12th in what, points leagues? I think in Roto I have him 7th.
Ooh. Okay.
And it was kind of a similar process Chris was talking about. Like, okay, I know Corey Seager's better than Adalberto Mondesi. I know Xander Bogaerts is.
You do.
So I wanted to rank them ahead of him. But when push comes to shove, based on the needs Mondesi has the potential to meet, you can't draft him ahead of you can't draft him behind them.
You have him ahead of Carlos Correa in Roto.
Yeah.
That's a spicy meatball. It makes sense. I mean, it does. But
Carlos Correa has been an underwhelming fantasy option.
Not 2 years ago.
Okay, but for most of his career, I think it's fair to say overall he has not lived up to expectations. And you know,
now he has back issues.
How many?
I think he's closer to Seager than not.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that. I have much more faith in Carlos Correa than I do in Mondesi repeating. I understand the steals, and you know.
Now here's where it gets interesting. Here's the shortstop eligible players who were drafted ahead of him on average in those 9 early mock drafts. Didi Gregorius, which he's not going to play early next year, right?
Yeah, he's going to miss it probably at least a month and a half.
Probably pre that news.
Right.
Yes. Gene Segura, who I like a lot, but fair. Gleyber Torres, Corey Seager, Xander Bogaerts. I think he's in that discussion.
Yeah, I could see that, but I think Carlos Correa has first round potential. None of those other guys do.
Carlos Correa is going 48 spots higher than him. I don't think that's a premium that I'm going to be willing to pay.
Sure. Could also understand that. Chris, anything else you guys want to look at with Scott's shortstop rankings?
I mean, just generally speaking, I've talked about how many more high-end shortstops there are and how I still consider Corey Seager a high-end shortstop and I have him 9th. That should tell you that it's really less than ever before. It's a position you don't need to pay up for. So, like, I would be thrilled to get Carlos Correa at his going rate, Seager at his going rate. I probably won't be the guy who drafts Mondesi, but in a points league, I think he could be end up being a huge value because everybody's just going to assume he's this Roto specific guy. And when, even though big base dealers, I mean, 2 points a steal, that adds up to big point production too. So I think there's a lot of potential to get in the middle rounds a shortstop who performs like a stud. And that's not something there's more potential to do it at that position than at first base, which is just crazy to think about.
I only got one more email to read here, and then we will let everybody get on their merry way, and I will read it right after this.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
All right, here we go at fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. This email comes from Gangsta Santa.
Ooh.
Sure.
Yeah, Gangsta Santa. Can Cole Hamels come close to replicating his 2018, just as 2018 with the Cubs, over the full season of 2019? I'm looking to go back-to-back in my Dynasty League. Could use a stable arm. Pitching cats, meow, are quality starts, strikeouts, ERA. I don't have to read all this. Would you give up a guy like Dakota Hudson for Cole Hamels?
Yeah, I don't think Dakota Hudson has enough upside to pass up what I see as like a number three arm in fantasy. He had a 2.36 ERA and 12 starts with the Cubs, which isn't going to happen. But he improved enough as a strikeout pitcher, and most of the really bad home run starts came when he was in Texas last year. That I think he's a mid three ERA guy still, and will eat a lot of innings. Probably win a decent number of games too with the Cubs.
Would you rather have Nick Pivetta or Cole Hamels?
I'd rather have Cole Hamels.
Chris, I'd probably rather have Cole Hamels. I probably won't draft Cole Hamels very much, though.
Cole Hamels.
I still believe in Nick Pivetta, though.
Hamels or Chris Archer?
Archer for me.
Yeah. Higher ceiling.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Gangsta Santa, for not terrorizing us and for emailing us instead. Appreciate that. And we'll talk to you next week. Are you guys in next week?
Yeah.
I am.
All right. We'll talk
to you
next week, baby. When it's... oh, God. Just shut up, Adam. Just end the show. All right. Goodbye. Bye.